Hello, everyone. Welcome to the We Are Children's Division podcast. We have with us, as always, our communications guru, Ashton Kiever. Ashton, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Daryl. The weather is beautiful, and I'm looking forward to spring.
Yeah, I know. It's very, very nice. It's come early. Some people are being cataclysmic about that, but I like being able to go outside. So I think that's all really, really wonderful. So we talk about topics here on the We Are Children's Division podcast. Ashton, what is the topic for today?
Today, we are having a little bit of a touch base with our prevention team that sort of sparked up and filled up last year at the end of the legislature last year. Is that right?
Yes. It was a big part of the plan. The legislature gave us people with whom we could work to do actual prevention, to do primary prevention in the state of Missouri. It is bold and it is exciting, and that is the topic for today. So we have today a whole crew of people who are involved in that work here. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go around the room and have everybody introduce themselves, except for I know that you all know Danielle Corley, our deputy director, who has been handling all of this. Danielle, how are you?
Doing well. I'm excited about this podcast. This has been an exciting 8 months for us.
I know. And before we went on, Danielle said, you know, I don't want to be doing a lot of talking here because I want our team who's doing the work to be doing the talking, but I may well make her talk as we go forward with this, because a lot of what we've built here has been sort of her real serious and thoughtful creation and imagination and direction and wisdom with regard to this. So Danielle, we just appreciate you a whole bunch for all you've done to help get this thing launched. And of the 100, we got 100 new FTE. Of the 100, we have how many, Danielle?
81. We're at 81 of the 100.
So there are
As of this recording,
by the time you all listen to this, we might have the whole 100. It might be true, but as of right now, we only have 9 positions left to fill. So that's very exciting, and the work has already begun, and people are out in the field doing exciting stuff, and we're going to hear about that today. So Danielle, what's just your general impression about how things have gone so far in these early days?
Well, I think things are going well. And so to kind of clarify that or explain it a little bit, I think with knowing that we've got 81 of the 100 folks in seats, that's fantastic. We've got the, you know, 20 of those were supposed to be TDM facilitators. And so we've done that. And Elaine has worked like crazy to get this TDM contract up and running. And that is moving, and we're getting ready to start training people. So that's underway. The FCS workers, there were another 20 that were FCS workers. When we went through our staffing crisis, FCS was one of the things that kind of had to go by the wayside for a little bit in a lot of areas, because we had to focus on getting the investigations and the alternative care cases case managed. And so it's so exciting to see all of that FCS programming coming back and getting up and running again. And I think the primary prevention piece will be key in flipping some of what we've got going on in Missouri. You know, our numbers continue to come down safely of our legal status one kids. And so that's been nice to see. We've got engagement efforts with community members, not just schools, but hospitals and medical providers and law enforcement. All of that it seems to be going well. And I think that's going to be really important for getting families served in their communities in a safe way. So it's exciting, Daryl. I appreciate you leading the way on this, because without you having this as your vision, this just wouldn't be happening right now. So I'm really thankful for that.
Hey, Daniel, for the maybe the newer team members at CD, can you tell us what TDM and FCS stand for?
Sure. TDM is our team decision-making program, and FCS is our family-centered service program. So FCS serves our intact families. It may be that they've had a hotline, and they just need some services to help get through this space in their life. And then we can help them get through that. And then they go on and things are great. The team decision-making meetings, I'm not going to take steal Elaine's thunder on this because she's worked really hard on it, but I'll let her give you kind of an overview of it as we get to that. But TDM is team decision-making meetings.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for doing that, Ashton, because we tend to speak almost completely in acronymese, and acronymese is not, it's just not everybody's fluent in that. I'm not fluent in that yet. People still will say acronyms to me and I'll go, what is a PDQ-SR7? What is that? But it's good to know. And interestingly, you know, I think we can thank the legislature. I think we can thank the legislature for the way they set this up, because when they gave us the 100 new people, they had read our plan. They had read the vision. They read what we were trying to do, and they designated specifically that of the 100 that we have some flexibility, but at least 20 of them would be team decision-making meeting, you know, people, and at least 20 of them would be family-centered services, so that we really can't. So people who think that, oh, well, this could all just go away, we really can't just turn that off, because it is designated that that is what those people will do. And the others, I think we have flexibility to do both, either, and a lot of other things, which we will talk about here. So it's very exciting, and it is in place, and it is in, it's almost like it's in concrete. That is it is a thing. It is going to be there until somebody brings a jackhammer to it. So I'm excited about it, and I think it's really terrific. So with that, I hear all of you talk about all the things you're doing, and I have to say right at the beginning, just thank you. Thank you for being involved in this and doing this. You know, when you're looking to do system reform, real big system reform, it's difficult, because it's like modifying an airplane while you're flying it. And that's, so all that work that you all are doing is sort of scrambling around the airplane and making the pieces work while we keep everything else running. And it's very exciting and important that you are doing it. So I will tell you, you know, we've heard several people talk about TDMs, and of course, we're talking about prevention. And when I first went around the state and I talked to the 46 circuits and I did all those vision surveys and people wrote things down, I think the acronym, people write down acronyms, you know, I think the acronym TDM was written down more than anything else. I kept seeing it. Where are they? Where did they go? Why don't we do them? Oh, my goodness, they were so powerful and useful. And people were talking about prevention everywhere. So you all are leading, I think, what the sentiment of what our teams believed and do believe out in the field, from everything that we've learned and, you know, we're able to gather during all that information collecting. And it's proven true. I mean, I think we're seeing the impacts of it already. I think you're beginning to see some real shifting and some really great work going on. But the question I have for all of you, because you did other things at Children's Division before, you got involved in all this, some things you may still be doing, but why? Why were you interested in doing this prevention work? What were you thinking, Lauren Hall? I'll go around the room and we'll ask, what were you, that's the question. What were you thinking? What were you thinking when you said you'd do this?
Well, I had kind of a natural lead into it. Prior to coming to central office, I did a lot of alternative care work. I started off in the field as an alternative care worker. I did some subsidy work as an adoption specialist. I also did some relative and foster home licensing. And then I moved on to supervising alternative care. And I think what really hit me was the opportunity for Family First Prevention Services Act prevention efforts, so FFPSA for short. That involves some contracting and rollout in pilot sites, as well as some exciting new work with Chapin Hall, trying to develop a community pathway for prevention services. So trying to get those farther upstream, kind of how FFPSA was originally intended to be anyway. So I came to central office with that idea of this is an amazing opportunity to be able to help families in a different light. And whenever you are able to pave the way for this primary prevention opportunity, it just felt amazing to be able to think, wow, this truly gets to the heart of what my passion is and really trying to help families and keep them together. I think that's a huge leading passion for our whole entire team is what can we truly provide as supports to communities, to families, as well as to our workforce to be able to have the skills to provide those opportunities to our families to actually keep children home whenever safely to do so. And so for me saying yes, it just felt natural with the connection to FFPSA and what my hope was that that could be and is going to be as well. But and just continuing forward with how we can work with families in a different manner.
You know, what's interesting about that, Lauren, is that if you think about our system as a continuum, right? The alternative care is where I lived in the system as a judge, right? It is the back end. It is the deep end of the system. And so from that vantage point, I mean, what I'm hearing from you and what I experienced too was from where I was sitting, I looked at the cases and I knew the facts and I just would wonder what could have happened if we were involved with this family a year before they came here? You know, what would have happened if on the second hotline that wasn't quite enough but was troublesome, if we could have given them X or Y? And to understand the pain that the children and the families go through being an AC person, right? I mean, you saw all that.
Yes, absolutely. So I think whatever involvement we have, the least trauma-inducing that we can be for families is of the utmost importance. And how can we truly make a positive impact in an earlier space without it leading to a larger consequence for children and families?
Yeah, because we've seen, you and I have seen the consequence, right? Being yes. Back into the system, people, we see how that goes. And it's like, man, if we can avoid it, it's great. So Jean, we'll move on to you. Jean, what were you thinking?
Well, Lauren said it really well. And so I think it comes back to, I mean, it really does. It's about, for me, we see so many kids in foster care and the trauma that we do cause. And could we have not done something to prevent that? Or what could we have provided? And it's just really about keeping the kids safe and families together. And that's often thought of, we don't want to keep kids safe. That vision looks different. And so it's educating the community also, as well as the partners that we have on what we can provide and what we can do. And we talk about different levels of prevention. And so what really excites me is not only that primary prevention up front, but there's also different layers throughout the system. So prevention doesn't necessarily stop at the time of or before a hotline. It's always happening and ongoing. And what can we do? It's never ending. And it's what we as a community should come together to do to provide those resources to families. So to me, it's exciting. We always talk about, I hope I get worked out of a job at some point, right? But prevention is always needed, and I know it's secure and look forward to seeing it grow.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about prevention being something beyond just the very, very front end, that it would continue. And what you're preventing is the next intervention, the next level of intervention that would be difficult and hard for you. I've had people, conversations with people about, well, what's the difference between prevention and diversion? Well, I think diversion is a form of prevention because you're preventing the next thing that we were going to do to you or do to this family because we felt we had to, right? So it's interesting to sort of paint that picture, Jean, of it being saturated throughout the practice, right? I think that's a really great thought. So Elaine, what were you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, everything that you guys just said is right where my heart is. I think about my interview when I interviewed to come to the Children's Division, and I said, I want to work prevention with families. And they're like, okay, maybe FCS is an option for you. I ended up becoming an investigator, which is the opposite of prevention in so many ways. But I tried really hard to find ways to weave prevention into investigative practice. And I think that is something that's just so important. And you said it, Daryl, like every continuum of intervention with a family, from the least restrictive to the most restrictive, we should be weaving prevention into each touch that we have with a family. And when we don't do that, we're really doing a disservice. We're setting families up for failure. So the ability to be able to do a program, to be able to have cutting edge practice in the state of Missouri is beyond anything that I think this team thought that we were going to be able to be involved in. So it would be silly for me to say, no, I don't want to be part of that. This is the future of child welfare. I think federally, we can see that is the case. I think that for the state, we are have the ability to really create a program that is sustainable in a way that keeps families home with their families. We, the research is very clear that families do best in their home of origin, and to be able to do the work that keeps them there in a safe way, get to that root cause, right? The what's causing challenges for families, and how can we help them overcome that with their natural support systems? That's such a valuable thing to provide that allows us to set families up for success and be a proactive system rather than just somebody who reacts to a report of concern or to a crisis in a family. So this work is my heart work. I can't imagine my life without this type of work in it. It is just an honor to be involved and be able to say this is actually what we do. And I told our team, when we look back in 10 years, 5 years, and we say we were able to sustain that, there's no greater thing that I can say I did with my career and my life.
Yeah, thank you for all that, Elaine. And I'll tell you, from the first time I talked with you, even before we had all this set up, you were saying these things. And so in a lot of ways, you are the spirit of this. You embody that for us. Your heart has been there from the beginning, and we really, really are grateful for it. And it's interesting that your initial work is on the opposite side of the system than Lauren's work was, which again just sort of totally corresponds with Gene's vision of this thing, which is it saturates us. It's everywhere. And, you know, a good investigator, you know, as I've seen it, it's almost like they're doing a triage really, but diagnosis. You're doing diagnosis. You're doing the diagnosis early on in an intervention. And you're saying, what thing do we have to do right now? And having our investigators are a piece of the prevention unit in a sense, if they're doing the work right, because you're laying eyes on it and saying, what is it and what can we do? You know, so I think that's really, really true. Okay, Melissa, you're thinking, what was I thinking? You've been thinking this whole time, what was I thinking?
Well, I will tell you a little bit of history for me. I have been a passionate advocate in the child welfare system since 1994. I started as a baby, and you know, I really got into this job. It was just very simple. It was just because I really wanted to help people, and I felt like this was the best avenue for me to do that. And you know, now we're at 2024, and here I am. My primary beginning was, I worked in alternative care, actually with the intake unit. It was pre-adjudication unit in Jackson County. And, you know, just kind of ended my time, you know, in a circuit working in, alternative care, primarily with older youth, very difficult, situations where parents were just, and the child were just not able to function together. And like you, Daryl, and you, Lauren, I just often wondered, like, if I would have just been involved, like, you know, at the beginning of this crisis, whether that be, you know, just being in a school meeting or being able to help them contact departmental health to get that extra help, we might not be in this horrible crisis where, you know, I have this older youth with lots of issues that, you know, we don't have a solution for. So that has really been my passion, to be involved in this team with central office. You know, I have great ideas and just very excited about the future, you know, with prevention. So I very much thank everybody for being part of this team. And thank you, Daryl, for your passion.
No, thank you, Melissa. I appreciate that. Now, I will say for all of you out there in podcast land that you would not look at Melissa and believe that she has been working with this agency since 1994. You would not believe that. That's unbelievable, really. But if you think about if you think about it, you know, that's a similar tenure as that I have from when I came on as a young lawyer. I mean, my law license became effective in 1992. And the first thing that happened to me was I wound up in juvenile cases. So the first thing that happened. And so when you've seen the system from where we saw it, and we've seen it, you know, we've seen it be one thing, and then we saw it be another thing. And we've seen it over the years, and you've seen the whole thing. And when you come to the end of it, you know, you at least I ask the question, and I'm hearing this from you too. You ask, you know, the big thing we've built, should we have built something else?
Yeah. Yes.
And could we have built something to have dealt with that family in a compassionate, merciful, thoughtful way a year earlier than the intervention you ended up having to do, right? I mean, that's an interesting perspective. Thank you so much, Melissa. I appreciate that. And last but not least, once again, Michelle, what were you thinking when you decided to do this?
Well, I am much like everyone else on here, and they've all taken my words, but I have done many things in children's division in my 15 years. My last job before moving to central office was a circuit manager in the Southwest region. And when the talk started coming out about prevention and the things that were going on around prevention, it very much excited me, because prevention has always been my heart. FCS was my favorite thing to supervise. When I supervised, I loved working with families and really getting in there and doing the work with families and just working with them and making that connection with families on that level. And so it's always been a passion of mine. And so when there was all this talk about prevention, I really was piqued. My interest was piqued. And then when you add TDM to it, it really raised that for me. And I think for myself, it was just wanting to take that step forward and really help the whole state. And it brings me back to something a regional director had said when we first started working. This is, we want to build it so strong that it's not going to go anywhere. And so I really wanted to be a part of that and help build it and make it to where, like Elaine said, 5-10 years from now, we can look back and prevention is stronger and bigger than what it is. And I think for me, it's just been amazing to hear story after story of work that's being done in communities where we are working with families and honoring them as the experts in their own life and really just coming alongside them and helping them through a hard time or a crisis that would initially result in a hotline that would require so many other steps. And not that that isn't going to happen, because child safety is of the utmost importance. We're always going to assure that. We're always going to, you know, check child safety and not take that out of the equation. But how can we help families and really see them in their story, and that they're not just a number, because every number has a story, and we have to be sure that we are helping with that. And so I see prevention exploding in the state of Missouri. I already see it at community meetings, as far as communities really wanting to come together. And so it's exciting for me to see communities come together and all these different agencies want to help and collaborate. And we're not going to just silo all of our work and blame other agencies, but we're going to work together, because together we're better. And we have to continue doing that work. And so I am just excited to be a part of it and to roll TDMs out across the state and see those happening again, and just seeing all the great connections workers are making and the excitement when they get to talk about things that they've done within their region or within their community, and the connections they're making. It's exciting. It's an exciting time, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
You know, Michelle, what I noticed is in that conversation there, you said the word help I don't know how many times. And I think that it is so right. We went around and did division talks, and we talked about the prime directive. The first thing we were going to do was help people. We're going to help people. and ask the question, is what we've done in the past been helpful? And what I hear from you is, regardless of that, what we're going to do in the future is going to be helpful. And we're going to approach it that way. So it's a very exciting thing. So before we go on to the next portion of this, where we're talking about sort of what specifically you're doing now and what your actual functions are right now that you're doing that you are excited about and want to let us know. Ashton, do you have any follow-up questions about this giant vision that all this team has here?
You know, I'm just soaking it all in. It's a lot to wrap your head around, but I love that all of you have such a heart for this. It's really obvious. Like, you know, people listening aren't going to be able to see your faces when you talk about it, but your faces just sort of light up when you talk about how you get to help families and children and keep them safe and just be there before it becomes a crisis. It's just really, it's really inspiring to see. You know, Michelle, you kind of were mentioning, you were talking about communities a lot. And something that came up when we were starting to plan the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Month kind of social media and information that we're getting ready to put out for, we call it CAN month or CAP month. You know, how are you guys going to be involved in the connecting of the communities and what kind of community like resources are there that maybe people don't realize are there?
Well, I think it's the perfect time to ask that question, because the hope is that, you know, that can again segue into specifically what these folks are doing. But what I've been telling people throughout the state, we've been having these community meetings, is that, look, we're just facilitating what needs to happen on a community level. We're directing people to what exists in that community to help keep them safe and together. And so I think it's a great question. What do you guys think? How do we engage the communities? How has it been done? What do you think is going to be a way for that to happen for us? Everybody doesn't have to answer that, but anybody who's got a thought on it would be good.
I mean, I think exactly what you said, Daryl, is that these community meetings are a great catalyst for action, right? So at the end of most of our presentations, and so I know you do a lot of meetings, but this team also does meetings, and each region is doing meetings in their own communities, trying to talk about what we're doing in prevention, as well as bringing folks to the table who can be part of it. And most of them end with a call to action. And the call to action is, how can you be involved, right? Like, what is it that you can do as part of your community to help support the families who live in your community? And that's what we're trying to accomplish, meeting families where they are in their own communities, bringing their communities alongside of these crisis situations that families may encounter, and figuring out how they can be part of the solution. And I've done some research around adverse childhood experiences, right? There's also a portion of that research that's adverse community experiences, and how is the community part of either the solution or perhaps exacerbating the concern that is part of this crisis that a family is facing. So when we can help and connect families to what community partners are available, and then have communities see that these families need certain things, identify those gaps in services, and get them on board, I think that is one of the most critical pieces of what we do, is helping communities to be able to understand how they can be part of these solutions.
Well, and I think, this is Michelle, to piggyback off of Elaine, I'm thinking of a story I just recently heard. A family needed to do some anger management classes. They couldn't afford it financially. And so the prevention worker was able to go speak with some community partners who are going to donate and created a voucher system to help pay for this class for this family that couldn't afford it, so that it would not result in a further need of like a hotline or anything of that nature, but to just help that family. And so I think that staff feel more of an ability to reach out to those community partners, but also to, it's okay to ask and say, like, here's a struggle we're having, and, you know, how can you, as, you know, how can you come alongside and help financially, or help with like transporting kids to, you know, a doctor's appointment. I mean, it's so many different things that families struggle with, and it's not always monetary. Sometimes it is, you know, needing those supports, or help to a doctor's office. And so I think our communities, I think our workers are feeling confident after the community meetings Daryl does and just different things that, okay, I'm going to network with these community partners and figure out how we can all work together to do things for families. And I think they're figuring out that it's a lot easier to do, I think, in some areas than they thought it might have been, because I think community partners want to help. They just didn't know how. And so now we're helping them figure out like, oh, that's something we could help with. Yeah, that's easy. We can totally do that. And so it's really figuring that out. And I can say that Melissa has seen great success in that in the First Circuit. That is a very desolate area of community resources, and how people are coming forward and willing to help and partner with the prevention worker in the First Circuit. And so I know there's great work being done there as well around communities and pulling people together.
Well, thank you, Michelle. Go ahead, Jean.
Well, I 100% agree with what Michelle said. And just to piggyback off that, just for some examples, is we've seen the good dads trying to extend those in different areas throughout the state that we talk about and partnering together, parent cafes, getting those in place. Some are already offered through the home visitation programs. But in addition, they're willing to train other community members so they can hold parent cafes and reach a bigger population. That's happening and spreading. And not knowing how to ask or what they can do. In addition, to flip the coin, we're already starting to see that shift of, will you come and present, or will you have a table? You know, children's division, we have a stigma like, no, it's a stereotype. We don't want them. They're going to come take your kids. That's not the goal. And already seeing that change and shift to, will you come to the school? Will you come present to the staff about different resources, ideas? We've had people reach out to be able to talk about what we can do. And it's interesting because we used to set up a table to talk about, here's jobs that we have, or here's how the process works with Children's Division. Our tables are starting now to look like, here's resources on gun safety, safe sleep. Here's how you can access home visitation. Here's how you can treat your house for bugs. And so the table display looks different. And those resources are all free. Anybody in the community can access those and pass those out. And so I think it's just changing that light and view that people have as well.
Okay. Any other thoughts about the community engagement piece from any of you all?
Can I add just one little piece? I think there's the flip side of this. We're also excited to do this in Missouri. And what I realized when I started digging into it is that we're kind of behind the game across the country. We're kind of behind the prevention game. And so what we're finding is that communities are already doing a lot of this, and they're just excited to have us join with them. And so that's kind of a flip the script piece, I think, is because we are so excited about it, but really it's been going on, and now we just get to join in. And so, you know, talking about being able to work with moms who are pregnant, women who are pregnant. And like, that's a big thing that we haven't been able to do in the past. And we can do that with our primary prevention team. So there are just lots of good stories out there about that. But I think we need to give a lot of credit to our communities that just started doing it on their own, because we've got a lot of really successful agencies and just individuals out there doing it well. So that's my only little tidbit to add.
So for those of you in Missouri who are hearing about all these community meetings, if you've not seen one yet, or if you're from out of Missouri, I found out that we have listeners from outside of Missouri. Welcome to We Are Children's Division. For those of you from out of the state or out of the country, we are on many platforms where you could listen. What we've been doing is we've been going to the community, and we've been inviting educators, law enforcement, the courts, the community leaders, people who are service providers, just anybody who our local folks think would be interested in hearing this and being part of this. And we present sort of what our plan is and what the prevention work is that we're getting ready to start to do. But that's only an introduction to the real meeting, because the real meeting is when we have those folks get around a table And we mix them up. No children's division people all sit together. Educators all sit together. All the school counselors are together. Like police officers all together. No, you got to mix it up and get around a room and ask the questions and basically say, what can we do with the resources we have now to advance that plan and keep these families intact and safe? You know, what do we have now that we can do that with? And what do we not have that we need to build? And those are the questions that we're asking in the communities. And those conversations to date have been rich and wonderful. And I think just our real progress in our work in doing this thing. And so when we talk about Missouri doing prevention, really, we are just giving these communities the opportunity to do that prevention because they were out there ready and willing to do stuff for people, to help people. And, one of our goals of that whole thing is to introduce them to their prevention worker. Because, in addition to having their prevention worker, know what their resources are and know how to refer them, there are people who are going to know how to contact our people to say, what other resources do we have? What do we need to do to make this all okay? And so it's exciting in the extreme. I think, you all talk about 5-10 years down the road. I really hope that by that time we will build this into a model that will be that we can look at and be proud of and be happy with and really know that we have done what's right for the kids and families of Missouri. So that's all very exciting. So and any other community engagement thoughts? It really is the key to the whole thing. It really is, and it's very exciting. So what are you doing? What are you guys doing right now that you think folks ought to know about, and how that can they lean in and help you and think about things? And we'll start with you, Lauren. I know FFP. I will opine right now that you indicated that family first. You talk to legislators, community people who know about this stuff. They start talking family first, and that's like solving a Rubik's Cube right there. That's like, yeah, okay, we're going to try to figure out how to make that work. But you're really working hard to make that work. But what are you working on, and what do you think folks need to know?
Yeah, a little brief overview about FFPSA and where we are is that we've sent over the documents to procurement to start our RFP process, request for bid. That's our contracting mechanism for both the service providers as well as the purveyors. FFPSA is very specific about models being provided to Fidelity, and so that takes a lot of work with the people who developed or own the rights to the model and how they can connect with the people who will be doing the work to provide that to our families. So those contracts are over there and works right now with getting those to a place where they can be posted and bid on. But a really exciting piece is our work with Chapin Hall at the University of Chicago. That just started up at the end of last year. And my ongoing joke throughout all of FFPSA has been other states have Chapin Hall and Missouri has Lauren Hall. And while I'm very confident in myself, it is not the same. So we have Chapin Hall at the table, and that's so exciting because they are key leaders and so knowledgeable in all multifacets of FFPSA, but really helping us develop that that opportunity to provide these services farther upstream and develop what's called a community pathway. How can we get FFPSA prevention services that are on the clearinghouse in our plan, yada yada, all those specifics, but how do we get those particular things to our families farther upstream without the necessity of having an open case, going through a hotline, and truly connecting with families within their communities, which just aligns so well with what we're trying to do in primary prevention anyway. So that work has just kicked off. We've got some really exciting momentum behind it, lots of great progress that's going to come out of that. That's a 2-year project. So right now we've had some other folks from some other teams leaning in to speak into some of the data pieces that are going to be necessary to help inform those target populations that we're going to look at for this. But I'm truly excited about how we will have FFPSA going forward, not only with open cases that we'll have that we'll oversee, but how we can get that farther upstream to families within their communities of origin, connecting with people that they have comfort levels with, going to those resources that they know are in their communities and truly engaging and collaborating with them in that manner. So I'm so stinking excited about that work taking place alongside our rollout of FFPSA, how we've been approaching it. And I'm so excited about our primary prevention rollout and our TDM, but I don't want to steal the words from our other team members on here since I did that a little bit earlier. So I'll save those great updates for them to be able to share on.
No, it's okay, Lauren. It's okay if all of us say, yeah, what Lauren said. And we're going to say that a lot as we go forward. Yeah, what Lauren Hall said. And so you know, I had the opportunity to go to one of these meetings with Chapin Hall when they were here in St. Louis. And I will tell you, understand who these people are. These folks are like the experts in child welfare. And what was really promising to me is that they kind of show up and they say, yes, you can. And they come with all this knowledge about how to engage FFPSA and how to do this. But what was really promising to me was their affirmation of this, that how we're approaching this, he said, is exciting and innovative and right. And when you've got experts saying that something that you're creating and started to create even before they got here is right, it really feels great. And by the way, they've been watching one of them. I was surprised, is a listener to our wonderful podcast here. And it's, well, somebody from another state who's an expert in this is listening in and has great feedback for us. So thank you, Lauren. I think it's really exciting. Thank you for going out and finding them. I mean, and really, you are responsible as much as anybody else for saying, hey, them, we need them. We need their help, and went out and got it. So thank you for doing that. And it is very, very exciting. So Jean, what is it we're working on right now you think folks ought to know about?
I think there's a lot of work going on across the state for the prevention workers. Everybody's at a different stage. I know a lot of staff are, one, learning their own resources in the community. I think that it was mentioned earlier is a lot of this stuff is already happening or was in place. So now it's just linking with them, knowing what's available, trying to find those gaps. I also feel that throughout the state, we're doing some community assessments, may it be at the hospitals, with the OBGYNs, with the schools, to see what are the deficits that we are having, what are we needing, so we can try to create or develop those resources within the communities as well. So I see a lot of that happening and going on across the state. I feel with the prevention piece, there's always a lot of, you know, I'm going to sneak in some stories here that I think are great just to show the example, because I don't know if we'll run out of time. And I think it's just important to just show there are examples that I've heard where you have prevention workers, you know, bed bugs or cockroaches tend to be an issue, tends to be a pattern of what we can do. There's treatment for that. There's resources out there. We can take care of that and come together to help these families. And so they're providing those resources, and not only by themselves, they're doing it with the school. The schools are learning, here, we have this pot of money that we can access, or we have these connections with someone that can spray the home or offer these. And so we see that partnership happening to treat the homes, to get those resources to the family so it lasts longer. And some of the prevention workers are even going in there and talking to the family and educating them, because you can't sustain it without that education piece. So a lot of that is happening. So not only linking families to these resources, educating them, empowering them also to make the difference.
Yeah, thank you, Jean. I think that linking, that putting things together, is very important. It makes me think of the old commercial about the Reese's peanut butter cup, right? You know, you had one thing and you had the other thing, and you got your chocolate in my peanut butter, you got your peanut butter in my chocolate, and once we put it together, it was the best thing ever. And so, you know, getting together with these folks is good. The other thing is, it's powerful. Sometimes I feel like we've had an appliance that we're trying to make run, and finally, when we connected to the community, it was like we plugged in. We plugged into the power source, because that community is the power source to generate, to make things go. So it's, yeah, the connections are really, really powerful. So Elaine, I think you were talking about TDM a lot. Is that what you're going to talk about? What do you have going on? What are you doing?
Yeah, sure. So I do want to talk about TDM, but I wanted to say one thing before that regarding the family-centered services. So one of the things that Danielle had mentioned earlier was that when we are facing crisis capacity, sometimes our family center services is the first program area to see a hit, right? And this the ability for us to say we have these 20 workers that have been delineated for SDS specifically has just been powerful. And while 20 is not near enough, I think what it has done is kind of helped flip that narrative a little bit around SDS really is a critical part of our work. And I was talking to a supervisor who oversees a unit of SDS workers, and her unit had gone from 10 to 1. And just over the course of the past 8 to 10 months, I've been encouraging her, advocate to your circuit manager, advocate every time you have an opening, can that person come to SDS? And she's now up to 5 full-time SDS workers in her unit. So the push forward in these spaces that, yes, primary prevention is the catalyst for all of this stuff, but it's also impacting our ability to provide secondary prevention and tertiary prevention to these families. And to me, that's just incredibly powerful to see that kind of trickle effect happening in all of our circuits. So very exciting update around that. So yes, TDMs, and I could talk for days, so I'm going to try to very succinctly tell us where we're at for TDMs. Our contract was signed on January 19th. It is March 13th. And we are already at the place where our protocols and our procedures have been through all the approval processes, which is in and of itself a miracle. And we are ready to start rolling out the trainings for TDMs. That will start at the end of April. We have 2 pilot sites in the Southwest area pilot's probably not the right word. 2 sites who are holding some PIP initiatives around TDM work in the Southwest area. And they're going to be able to get some of this training so they can hit the ground running. But we're going to see this training coming out as we continue to progress around getting TDMs ready. We have the 20 TDM facilitators, but we're also training all of our prevention workers to be facilitators so that they are able to be backup facilitators when it is possible in the rest of their workload. But where we're at right now is the training. We're getting everyone trained, and we should see us going live in regions throughout the summer. So incredibly exciting to see that coming back.
Well, thank you, Elaine. And like I said, they were the item, the single most common noted item in the vision surveys that people said they really wanted to see. And when you talk about with people in the community and we talk about those, they're excited about. I mean, I've talked to people in the schools and in the hospitals and you mean we could set up a meeting and talk with these people rather than just call a hotline when we're worried about them? If we don't have evidence, we're just wondering what's going on and wondering how we can help. Yes, exactly. That can happen. And I think we could see them breaking out all over the place. And when we do, and the thing I love about TDMs is it's so strength-based, right? It's getting that family in a room around a table with the people that are their people and saying what resources are in this room that we can marshal to make sure that your family is okay and that your child is safe and that you guys flourish. What can we do? And I think it's just such a powerful, powerful thing. So thank you for all that, Elaine. I thank you for all your good work. And I will note, you know, I went to a TDM, one of the TDM sort of launch meetings that we had, and how quickly we're getting this done. It's faster than anything else anybody's ever seen is how quick this is happening. And so it's really, really impressive. So thanks for all your work on it. So Melissa, what is it that you're working on and that you think our folks ought to know?
Well, I have been working on opening up the Children's Treatment Services contract and catalog service. Right now, our contract, the CTS contract, which we refer to it, Children's Treatment Service contract, is open, but yet it's closed, right? It's open to open cases, investigations, FCS, alternative care. It has to have an open case with a link to a DCN. I'm working to open it up to prevention, where they do not necessarily have to, they do not have a DCN. And that requires developing a code for prevention. We have got the approval to continue to develop the code. I have a meeting tomorrow about the new code, and I think it's going to be PREV with the beginning of 0001. And that will open it up to us being able to provide services to people in that are working with prevention teams. And I think it will have a great impact on the work that we do and, you know, just moving forward and preventing children from entering into care and from, you know, becoming a part of our system. So that's just very exciting. And I do want to shout out to a few folks because the fiscal folks and the people who work on FACES have been just very supportive also of the work that we are doing. Very encouraging to me and very open to, you know, they are like, we have a suggestion. You know, Arlene has been so helpful. Annie Gilbert, Amanda, Ann Perkins. So I'm just very thankful and grateful for them and all of their ideas and what they have done to help with this process of as far as opening up Children's Treatment Services. I'm also working in the first and helping them. They have their third community meeting today. So that's very exciting. And Elizabeth Whitlock has done a great job. And Shelley Curry is a great circuit manager. Like I said, that area is very lacking in a lot of services, but I think it's starting to develop. There are also some CTS contractors that are willing to expand into that area. So if anybody knows of anybody who would be interested in becoming a CTS contractor, I'm definitely recruiting.
Thank you for that, Melissa. So if those of you don't know where the First Circuit is, the First Circuit is up in the northeast corner of the state. And when you look at the number of kids in care per capita, it is remarkably high. And it just looks like it's because of, you know, services that aren't there. And that's why it's exciting for that community to be having those meetings like that. Melissa, I just thank you for your work in helping them. And also thank you for this work in helping get the services disconnected from our bureaucratic case counting, case management system. That is a big, big deal. I don't think people need to understand what a big deal that is, because families don't have to deal with the stigma or the fear or the bureaucracy of having to deal with all that in order to get the help they need. We'll just have a way of getting them the help that they need. And that saves us time and resources, and it makes common sense. So on behalf of all things decent and commonsensical, thank you, Melissa, for what you're doing, because it's very exciting and important to do. So
thank you.
So last but not least, of course, Michelle, I've been coming to you last just because that's where you are on the list. So I apologize for that. What do you have going on?
I am really a champion cheerleader, however I can help Elaine with TDM. So really helping with that. Also working on a, like I talked earlier, Kids to Kin guardianship contract, where we could help pay for guardianships without having to bring kiddos into care if it's just that family's been caring for them for a long time and they haven't had the means to proceed with that. We could help proceed with that for families. So I'm excited about that program. And then beginning to work on domestic violence, intimate partner violence training that can be rolled out for the whole state. And looking forward to bringing that forward and just really providing some good training around that for staff as they're working with families out in the field in any area within Children's Division. And so looking forward to that as well.
Well, thank you, Michelle. I really appreciate that. You know, the guardianship work, we've been talking for a couple of years now about embracing the probate code, about using guardianships when it's appropriate, not using it for everything, but when the issue is, this child's with grandma and grandma just needs the power to be able to take care of what needs to happen. And, you know, one parent's in prison and the other one is off somewhere. Why in the world would we create one of these cases and all the things that go with it when we could just help grandma get the things that she needs to be able to do what she needs to do? I think about that like a lawyer. I am a lawyer. So I think about it that way. And I've seen what great work can be done there. So that is a big deal, and I thank you for doing that. So, Ashton, I'm sure we're running short on time here. You always have the great last big questions. We've shared some stories. We've had we've had some conversations. We should now end with a song. No, I'm teasing. What do you have any other follow-up questions for us this morning?
You know, I don't really have any follow-up questions. I'm just looking forward to catching up with this team again in maybe another 6 months or something, so we can see what a full year of prevention work has done for our teams and our families. So.
Okay. Danielle, you're the leader of this thing. I can't thank you enough that you're in that space and doing this thing. So do you have any parting words or questions or stories or anything you want us to let everybody know before we go on our way?
I think as long as we remember that it's about our families and our communities, you know, I said this team has been just a joy to work with. I wouldn't have wanted to launch this in Missouri with anybody else. I'm super appreciative of them. I'm really appreciative of our staff that are in the field who have agreed to take on prevention, because it's a little nerve-wracking. It's a little scary. It's not something that we have typically done well in the past. And so for it to look like this and for us to have the team that's willing to commit to it, I'm just super thankful and super appreciative. And that's about it for me.
All right. Well, I have to echo that because this group here is the dream team, I think, with regard to this work and being able to lead it forward. But I thank you all for being here today and for being part of this. But I also want to thank everybody out in the field because it is your vision, really, that inspired this. It's the things that you have been saying and wanting to do for so long that has made this possible, and you're making it happen. I'm hearing about it everywhere I go. Great stories of people helping people, people making a difference in the lives of our kids and our families, and it's showing up, and you're really changing the world. So thanks to the group here that we have together today, but also thanks to all of you out there who have been a part of this. Like we said, like I think Gene pointed out to us, that this doesn't happen just at one end of the system or the other end of the system. It saturates it. It's a mindset. It's a new mindset to help people and to do it in the least invasive, traumatic way possible. And it's exciting. And so I think we're going to really see a difference going forward. And I'm excited about all of it. So all of you, everybody who was here today, and for all of you who have listened today, thank you for listening in, and we'll see you next time on the We Are Children's Division podcast. Thank you all very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the We Are Children's Division podcast. Check out our other podcast, The Call to Foster, a podcast dedicated to sharing real experiences from foster parents, advocates, and former foster youth, which aims to secure safe and nurturing homes for children in Missouri. Don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes of the We Are Children's Division podcast. Thanks for listening.